This is the University of Cambridge Local Examination Syndicate, International General Certificate of Secondary Education, June 1998 examination, in English as a second language. Paper 4. Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, candidate number, and center number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the test. If you would like the tape to be louder, tell your teacher now. The tape will not be stopped while you're doing the test. The tape should now be stopped and the papers handed out. Now you are all ready. Here is the test. Look at the questions for part one. There are 6 questions in this part of the exam. You will hear each question twice. For each question, you will hear the situation described as it is on your exam paper. Part 1. Questions 1 to 6. For questions 1 to 6, you will hear a series of short sentences. Answer each question on the line provided. Your answer should be as brief as possible. You will hear each question twice. Question 1. Anna wants to go to a film this evening. She telephones the cinema. Can she book tickets in advance?
Welcome to the Cinema Royale. Tonight's film commences at 7:30. Seats are non-bookable and cost £3.80 each. Thank you. Welcome to the Cinema Royale. Tonight's film commences at 7:30. Seats are non-bookable and cost £3.80 each. Thank you.
Question 2. You are planning a boat trip with a friend. You listen to the weather forecast on the radio. Give 2 reasons why you might not carry out your plan.
Here is the weather forecast for the southern region. A dry, cloudy start will be followed by rain for a time until late afternoon. It will become brighter again towards evening. The winds will be strong southwesterly, perhaps rising to gale force. The air will feel chilly, the temperature rising to a maximum 11 degrees Celsius. Here is the weather forecast for the southern region. A dry, cloudy start will be followed by rain for a time until late afternoon. It will become brighter again towards evening. The winds will be strong southwesterly, perhaps rising to gale force. The air will feel chilly, the temperature rising to a maximum 11 degrees Celsius.
Question 3. John is talking about a meal. What 2 complaints does he have about it?
So, how was your dinner?
There was nothing wrong with the chicken, but the vegetables were undercooked. The dessert was delicious, but I do object to cold coffee.
So, how was your dinner?
There was nothing wrong with the chicken, but the vegetables were undercooked. The dessert was delicious, but I do object to cold coffee.
Question 4. Sarah wants to find the tourist information office. Which building is it in?
Excuse me,
Where can I find the tourist information office, please?
Let me see. Go straight along this road as far as the first set of traffic lights. Turn right there, go past the museum. When you get to the town hall, go in through the main entrance and you'll find it on your left.
Thank you. Excuse me, where can I find the tourist information office, please?
Let me see. Go straight along this road as far as the first set of traffic lights. Turn right there, go past the museum. When you get to the town hall, go in through the main entrance and you'll find it on your left.
Thank you.
Question 5. Mark is shopping in a department store and would like something to eat. Where is the restaurant?
Excuse me, where's the restaurant, please?
It's next to the sportswear department. You can take the lift or you can use the stairs.
Thank you. Excuse me, where's the restaurant, please?
It's next to the sportswear department. You can take the lift or you can use the stairs.
Thank you.
Question 6. Why is the train to Johannesburg late? And where can it be boarded?
Passengers may now board the delayed Johannesburg train, which is waiting at Platform 2. We wish to apologize to passengers for the late departure of this service, which has been delayed due to essential repair work to the line. Passengers may now board the delayed Johannesburg train, which is waiting at Platform 2. We wish to apologize to passengers for the late departure of this service, which has been delayed due to essential repair work to the line.
That is the last question in Part 1. In a moment, you will hear Part 2. Now look at Part 2, Exercise 1. Part 2, Exercise 1. Questions 7 to 12. Listen to the following extract from a radio program about the danger of clothing catching fire. Then complete the notes below. You will hear the extract twice. Wearing great clothes can make you feel fantastic, but few people realize that all clothing can catch fire and burn, causing serious accidents. Each year, many people are killed or seriously hurt in or around the home when clothes accidentally catch fire. A government report has revealed that teenage girls and people over 60 are particularly at risk of being burned by clothes which catch fire accidentally. If you think it will never happen to you, think again.
Here are some safety hints. When you are buying clothes, check the label to see if it says, "Keep away from fire." Don't let loose clothing come near naked flames. Long dresses, nightgowns, saris, and clothes of that type are all potential fire hazards. Open fires account for over half of all non-fatal burns, but most fatal accidents are caused by gas cookers.
If your clothes catch fire, remember this rule. Stop. Don't panic and run about. Wrap the victim in a rug or blanket. Drop to the ground. Roll until the flames are extinguished. So, stop, wrap, drop, and roll.
When the flames are out, pour cold water over the burn for 10 minutes. Remove jewelry, as burning skin can swell. Cover the area. Then dial your emergency number or take the patient to hospital. Now you will hear the extract again.
Wearing great clothes can make you feel fantastic, but few people realize that all clothing can catch fire and burn, causing serious accidents. Each year, many people are killed or seriously hurt in or around the home when clothes accidentally catch fire. A government report has revealed that teenage girls and people over 60 are particularly at risk of being burned by clothes which catch fire accidentally. If you think it will never happen to you, think again.
Here are some safety hints. When you are buying clothes, check the label to see if it says, "Keep away from fire." Don't let loose clothing come near naked flames. Long dresses, nightgowns, saris, and clothes of that type are all potential fire hazards. Open fires account for over half of all non-fatal burns, but most fatal accidents are caused by gas cookers.
If your clothes catch fire, remember this rule. Stop. Don't panic and run about. Wrap the victim in a rug or blanket. Drop to the ground. Roll until the flames are extinguished. So, stop, wrap, drop, and roll.
When the flames are out, pour cold water over the burn for 10 minutes. Remove jewelry, as burning skin can swell. Cover the area. Then dial your emergency number or take the patient to hospital. That is the end of exercise 1. In a moment, you will hear exercise 2. Now look at the questions for exercise 2. Exercise 2. Question 13. Listen to this interview with a young balloon pilot and complete the notes below. You will hear the interview twice. And now, in our weekly careers spot, we are going to talk to 23-year-old David Fish, who is a professional balloon pilot. David, welcome and thank you for coming to talk to us about your unusual career. Did you always want to be a balloon pilot?
Yes, I did. Actually, when I was at school, my dream was to be an airship pilot.
Mm.
An airship, as you know, is rather different from a balloon in that it's driven by an engine. Anyway, I mapped out my whole career in this direction until the opportunity to buy a hot air balloon suddenly came my way, and I rashly decided to go ahead and buy it.
What a decision! Did this purchase change your career plans then?
Well, yes. I was still only 16 years old, but after the first flight in my own hot air balloon, I was hooked. So, in 1990, I was still at school, of course, I set up my own company and called it Advertair Limited. The company didn't arrange balloon flights for people. It operated radio-controlled hot air balloons, which carried advertising slogans on the side.
Mm, how enterprising. Did you stay with that company?
Sadly, no. I left Advertair in 1992 because I set up a new company with a business partner. We called it Ouse Valley Aviation. I was still only 18 years of age.
How was this new company different from your previous one?
Well, Ouse Valley Aviation operated hot air balloon flights at public shows. We also bought a couple of light aircraft and used them for flight training.
Mm.
This was a new direction for me.
What happened then?
We developed this company for 3 years, and then in 1995, we were awarded a Virgin Balloon franchise. So, we concentrated on passenger flights in hot air balloons.
Mm-hmm.
And this proved to be very popular and is still a growing part of the leisure industry.
Mm. Did you go to college? Do you have any formal qualifications?
No, I couldn't go to university or college. I left school at 16 with a business to run. I did some formal training for flying. I gained my aeroplane pilot's license when I was 17.
You make me feel exhausted just thinking about everything you've done. Is there more?
Well, yes. I then had the chance to buy my own airship. So I did. And at 19, I became the youngest airship pilot in the world.
What a record!
Yes, I suppose it is. Anyway, when I was 21, I got an additional balloon pilot's license for commercial use, and am still the youngest commercial balloon pilot.
Mm. Tell us about your working week, David.
At the moment, I work 6 to 7 days a week, although this does vary. Sometimes I start work at 3 in the morning. As a commercial pilot, I have to maintain duty hours, which is a set of rules about the number of hours I can safely work to stop me becoming too tired to concentrate. It's a legal safety requirement.
Mm. Is your work seasonal at all? It must be dependent on the weather.
Yes, you're right. We don't fly in adverse, windy or stormy conditions. In the summer, I'm out flying passengers or teaching people to fly. Or I might be flying one of the sponsored balloons. In the winter, I spend most of my time in the office, setting up promotions or taking bookings for the summer, and doing the administrative work, of course.
Do you take holidays?
Well, no. I don't have a specified number of days off a year. If I want to go on holiday, I have to go in winter, because in summer, I'm too busy.
Can I ask what you earn, or is it a secret?
No, it's not a secret. My pay is related to the profits made by the company. This year, I would like to think that I will earn over £20,000. Some of that will go back into the business. The starting salary for a balloon pilot is £12,000.
Mm. David Fish, thank you very much for speaking to us. We wish you and your company well for the future.
Thank you.
Now you will hear the interview again. And now, in our weekly careers spot, we are going to talk to 23-year-old David Fish, who is a professional balloon pilot. David, welcome and thank you for coming to talk to us about your unusual career. Did you always want to be a balloon pilot?
Yes, I did. Actually, when I was at school, my dream was to be an airship pilot.
Mm.
An airship, as you know, is rather different from a balloon in that it's driven by an engine. Anyway, I mapped out my whole career in this direction until the opportunity to buy a hot air balloon suddenly came my way, and I rashly decided to go ahead and buy it.
What a decision! Did this purchase change your career plans, then?
Well, yes. I was still only 16 years old. But after the first flight in my own hot air balloon, I was hooked. So, in 1990, I was still at school, of course, I set up my own company and called it Advertair Limited. The company didn't arrange balloon flights for people. It operated radio-controlled hot air balloons, which carried advertising slogans on the side.
Mm, how enterprising. Did you stay with that company?
Sadly, no. I left Advertair in 1992 because I set up a new company with a business partner. We called it Ouse Valley Aviation. I was still only 18 years of age.
How was this new company different from your previous one?
Well, Ouse Valley Aviation operated hot air balloon flights at public shows. We also bought a couple of light aircraft and used them for flight training.
Mm.
But this was a new direction for me.
And what happened then?
We developed this company for 3 years, and then in 1995, we were awarded a Virgin Balloon franchise. So, we concentrated on passenger flights in hot air balloons.
Mm-hmm.
And this proved to be very popular, and is still a growing part of the leisure industry.
Mm. Did you go to college? Do you have any formal qualifications?
No, I couldn't go to university or college. I left school at 16 with a business to run. I did some formal training for flying. I gained my aeroplane pilot's license when I was 17.
You make me feel exhausted just thinking about everything you've done. Is there more?
Well, yes. I then had the chance to buy my own airship. So I did. And at 19, I became the youngest airship pilot in the world.
What a record!
Yes, I suppose it is. Anyway, when I was 21... I got an additional balloon pilot's license for commercial use, and am still the youngest commercial balloon pilot.
Mm. Tell us about your working week, David.
At the moment, I work 6 to 7 days a week, although this does vary. Sometimes I start work at 3 in the morning.
Yes.
As a commercial pilot, I have to maintain duty hours, which is a set of rules about the number of hours I can safely work to stop me becoming too tired to concentrate. It's a legal safety requirement.
Mm. Is your work seasonal at all? It must be dependent on the weather.
Yes, you're right. We don't fly in adverse, windy or stormy conditions. In the summer, I'm out flying passengers or teaching people to fly. Or I might be flying one of the sponsored balloons. In the winter, I spend most of my time in the office, setting up promotions or taking bookings for the summer, and doing the administrative work, of course.
Do you take holidays?
Well, no. I don't have a specified number of days off a year. If I want to go on holiday, I have to go in winter, because in summer I'm too busy.
Can I ask what you earn, or is it a secret?
No, it's not a secret. My pay is related to the profits made by the company. This year, I would like to think that I will earn over £20,000. Some of that will go back into the business. The starting salary for a balloon pilot is £12,000.
Mm. David Fish, thank you very much for speaking to us. We wish you and your company well for the future.
Thank you.
That is the end of part two. There will be a short break before you hear part three. Part three. Exercise one. Questions 14 to 18. Listen to the following interview at the New Earth Galleries
of London's Natural History Museum. Then answer the following questions. You will hear the interview twice. And now, Sue Rose talks to Bob Bloomfield at the new Earth Galleries at London's Natural History Museum.
If you think geology is just a pile of old rocks and rubble, then come to the Natural History Museum for a real journey to the centre of the Earth. When I came here as a child to the old geological museum, it was really quiet. There were lots of coloured rocks sitting in display cases, and I don't remember much else, apart from the earthquake machine, the highlight of my visit. Is it still there, Bob?
Oh, yes. It always was the favourite exhibit. It was really only a vibrating platform, but now we've made it into the floor of a supermarket, where you can see video footage of the shop being rocked by an earthquake, while you experience the noise and vibration simultaneously.
Oh. Bob, you're the mastermind behind the new Earth Galleries. Tell us what else is new.
Well, we needed something exciting to draw people in. Once you've got a captive audience, you can go on to excite them about the subject matter. Mm. So now, as you enter, you'll hear a roaring, crashing soundtrack. And you will see above you a huge revolving Earth. The globe hangs 11 metres above us, and the escalator up to the next floor vanishes through the middle of it.
So, everything is more interesting for the visitors today.
Certainly. Come prepared to be excited by volcanoes, wind, water, and to interact with our push-button information screens. We realise that people's absorption of information depends on how much they are involved in what they are doing. If they make something happen, that's worth more than any text. Mm. Even children who run around pushing one button after another are still getting something positive from their visit. Encouragement, enjoyment, and a sense of being able to make things happen. If visitors leave the museum feeling inspired and motivated, then we have achieved something. Mm.
Do you have any more plans for the future?
Yes. By the end of this year, we plan to open 4 more galleries. These will explore the history of the Earth and man's impact on it. We hope these features will be just as lively and stimulating as everything you can experience here.
Thank you very much, Bob Bloomfield. Well, there you are. A good day out. The Earth Galleries and the whole of the Natural History Museum are open 10 till 6, Monday to Saturday, but opening 1 hour later on Sundays. Adult entrance is £5.50, but a family ticket is only £15, and it's free after 4:30.
Now you will hear the interview again.
And now, Sue Rose talks to Bob Bloomfield at the new Earth Galleries at London's Natural History Museum. If you think geology is just a pile of old rocks and rubble, then come to the Natural History Museum for a real journey to the centre of the Earth. When I came here as a child to the old geological museum, it was really quiet. There were lots of coloured rocks sitting in display cases, and I don't remember much else, apart from the earthquake machine, the highlight of my visit. Is it still there, Bob?
Oh, yes. It always was the favourite exhibit. It was really only a vibrating platform, but now we've made it into the floor of a supermarket, where you can see video footage of the shop being rocked by an earthquake, while you experience the noise and vibration simultaneously.
Oh. Bob, you're the mastermind behind the new Earth Galleries. Tell us what else is new.
Well, we needed something exciting to draw people in. Once you've got a captive audience, you can go on to excite them about the subject matter. Mm. So now, as you enter, you'll hear a roaring, crashing soundtrack. And you will see above you a huge revolving Earth. The globe hangs 11 metres above us, and the escalator up to the next floor vanishes through the middle of it.
So, everything is more interesting for the visitors today.
Certainly. Come prepared to be excited by volcanoes, wind, water, and to interact with our push-button information screens. We realize that people's absorption of information depends on how much they are involved in what they are doing. If they make something happen, that's worth more than any text. Mm. Even children who run around pushing one button after another are still getting something positive from their visit. Encouragement, enjoyment, and a sense of being able to make things happen. If visitors leave the museum feeling inspired and motivated, then we have achieved something. Mm.
Do you have any more plans for the future?
Yes. By the end of this year, we plan to open 4 more galleries. These will explore the history of the Earth and man's impact on it. We hope these features will be just as lively and stimulating as everything you can experience here.
Thank you very much, Bob Bloomfield. Well, there you are. A good day out. The Earth Galleries and the whole of the Natural History Museum are open 10 till 6, Monday to Saturday, but opening 1 hour later on Sundays. Adult entrance is £5.50, but a family ticket is only £15, and it's free after 4:30.
That is the end of Exercise 1. In a moment you will hear Exercise 2. Now look at the questions for Exercise 2. Part 3. Exercise 2. Questions 19 to 24. Listen to the following interview with Professor Sands. Then answer the questions. You will hear the interview twice.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Education Update. My guest today is Professor Anna Sands, who is going to tell us all about the latest European research on boys and their reading habits.
Thank you, Frank. Well, let me begin with the historical background to the study. A century ago, people worried about how to stop boys from reading too much. Some cartoons showed boy newspaper sellers on the streets who were too busy reading the newspapers to actually sell them. However, these days, it's assumed boys are not reading very much, and in particular, they're not reading fiction. Studies have shown that boys read less than girls, and that they choose information books and other kinds of non-fiction rather than fiction. Is it the case that boys are less capable of reading than girls, or that they each require different things from what they read?
That's an interesting question.
Teachers say that girls will read a boy's book, but boys will refuse to read something if they think it's for girls. Mm. Boys believe reading girls' books will make them look stupid in front of their friends. Boys who go into public libraries looking for something to read tend to be directed by the librarians to the information books or non-fiction shelves, because librarians assume that's what boys like.
Why is that?
Well, a recent European research study offers some interesting ideas about why boys are reluctant readers or don't read much at all. In the early 19th century novels, the male heroes were active men, soldiers and so on.
Mm.
But they were also fully developed characters who showed emotion and compassion and had meaningful relationships with the other characters in the novel. And that's really why these books were so popular. Later on, in the late 19th and early 20th century, however,
books came to be divided up into books for boys and books for girls. The boys' books still showed heroes who were men of action, who got involved in adventures, but by this time the characters had become rather superficial and weren't well developed, almost like the situation you get in comics and comic books.
Mm.
As boys got older and they grew out of simple adventure stories, so books written for them weren't interesting enough to hold their attention. To sum up, it seems boys got rather bored after the age of 12 or 13 with such a limited style of writing and type of story, and turned away from fiction, starting to prefer factual books.
Yes, I can see why they did that.
The study suggests that young people use reading, especially reading fiction, to help prepare themselves to cope with the kind of situations they will meet as they grow up and become more adult. Reading fiction provides an opportunity to discuss the consequences of the actions of characters and so on. Boys who don't read fiction lack the opportunity of identifying with characters and situations. There's less chance for discussion based on books, and for thinking about their future, and the possible situations they might find themselves in.
So you're saying that young people actually read to prepare themselves for life?
They read for pleasure too, but half the young people in the study said that reading fiction helped them prepare for making important decisions in their own life. For example, when to marry, how to bring up a family, what kind of career to choose. Many more girls than boys, however, thought reading fiction helped them solve a problem in their life, such as difficulties with friends, conflicts with parents, and worries about the future.
So, what are your conclusions?
It seems that if boys were offered more interesting fiction to read, it would encourage them to read more and more often. More good fiction needs to be written, which will interest boys. Such fiction should have an interesting plot and storyline, strong characters, and situations boys can really identify with, not silly, stereotyped ideas.
Well, Professor Sands, thank you very much.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Education Update. My guest today is Professor Anna Sands, who is going to tell us all about the latest European research on boys and their reading habits.
Thank you, Frank. Well, let me begin with the historical background to the study. A century ago, people worried about how to stop boys from reading too much. Some cartoons showed boy newspaper sellers on the streets who were too busy reading the newspapers to actually sell them. However, these days, it's assumed boys are not reading very much, and in particular, they're not reading fiction. Studies have shown that boys read less than girls, and that they choose information books and other kinds of non-fiction rather than fiction. Is it the case that boys are less capable of reading than girls, or that they each require different things from what they read?
That's an interesting question.
Teachers say that girls will read a boy's book, but boys will refuse to read something if they think it's for girls. Boys believe reading girls' books will make them look stupid in front of their friends. Boys who go into public libraries looking for something to read tend to be directed by the librarians to the information books or non-fiction shelves.
because librarians assume that's what boys like.
Why is that?
Well, a recent European research study offers some interesting ideas about why boys are reluctant readers or don't read much at all. In the early 19th century novels, the male heroes were active men, soldiers and so on.
Mm.
But they were also fully developed characters who showed emotion and compassion and had meaningful relationships with the other characters in the novel. And that's really why these books were so popular. Later on, in the late 19th and early 20th century, however, books came to be divided up into books for boys and books for girls. The boys' books still showed heroes who were men of action, who got involved in adventures, but by this time, the characters had become rather superficial and weren't well developed, almost like the situation you get in comics and comic books.
Mm.
As boys got older, and they grew out of simple adventure stories, so books written for them weren't interesting enough to hold their attention. To sum up, it seems boys got rather bored after the age of 12 or 13 with such a limited style of writing and type of story, and turned away from fiction, starting to prefer factual books.
Mm, yes, I can see why they did that.
The study suggests that young people use reading, especially reading fiction, to help prepare themselves to cope with the kind of situations they will meet as they grow up and become more adult. Reading fiction provides an opportunity to discuss the consequences of the actions of characters and so on. Boys who don't read fiction lack the opportunity of identifying with characters and situations. There's less chance for discussion based on books, and for thinking about their future, and the possible situations they might find themselves in.
So you're saying that young people actually read to prepare themselves for life?
Hmm. They read for pleasure too, but half the young people in the study said that reading fiction helped them prepare for making important decisions in their own life.
Hmm.
For example, when to marry, how to bring up a family, what kind of career to choose. Many more girls than boys, however, thought reading fiction helped them solve a problem in their life, such as difficulties with friends, conflicts with parents, and worries about the future.
So, what are your conclusions?
It seems that if boys were offered more interesting fiction to read, it would encourage them to read more and more often. More good fiction needs to be written, which will interest boys. Such fiction should have an interesting plot and storyline, strong characters, and situations boys can really identify with, not silly, stereotyped ideas.
Hmm. Well, Professor Sands, thank you very much.
That is the end of part 3 and of the test. In a moment, your teacher will stop the tape and collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, candidate number, and center number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, the tape should now be stopped and all the papers collected.